Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name, you will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey everybody, welcome in. It's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I'm David Summers, and here comes the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So, let's step back into the ring. Let's step back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. All right, Ron, I tell you what, when the snow gets more than ankle deep in South Alabama, something's going on, and they didn't tell me about it. So I know you are used to some snow in Tennessee, but we got as much as 8 inches not far from the Florida line. Can you believe that?
Whoa, no, man. I mean, it's hard to believe. New Orleans got, I think, more than you did, man.
Yeah, I think they did. I talked to, or actually my cousin had a post on Facebook. He said they had like 10 inches in New Orleans, and he lives right in the heart of New Orleans. And it's just unbelievable. We're maybe, what, 17 miles from Georgia, about maybe 20 miles from Florida right here in the Tri-States area. And the snow here is just incredible, and it's still here today. Now, the sun just popped out this morning, and you can barely tell that some of the stuff has melted away, but today could be a good melt day. But at this point, we're still at only like 29 degrees. So it's still going to be here for a little while anyway. So,
all right. Yeah, man. Yeah, you get used to it. If you lived up here, you'd get used to that, man.
Well, I'm good at not getting used to that at all. It was unbelievable how much was on the cars yesterday, which fortunately we didn't. We did crank them, but we didn't go anywhere, but we got the snow cleared off the cars just in case. So, all right, Ron, I'll tell you what, I'd like to start out with what is happening with the Tennessee Stud streaming.com channel. I know fans from all over the world must be wondering as well. So tell us what's going on.
Well, you know, Dave, I'd have to say that getting this streaming channel done is just as hard as winning the NWA world title, man. I mean, I wish I could just say it's ready to go, but I can't yet, you know, and it's supposed to be ready by maybe Friday, the 24th of January, you know, and fans can just keep in touch with me on social media, and I'll let everybody know when it's time that they can take that ride with me, man. So after missing last week's Studcast, I want to go right on into this Studcast today because we've got a great one, we're going to be focusing on the first night of the next year in our weekly ride into wrestling history that we've been on now for more than 7 years. And this one is going to begin on New Year's night, January the 1st, 1981. We were returning to Mobile's 10,000 seat main arena with the second holiday card in 8 days there. So in the last match there, which was Christmas night, the last eight wrestlers in the 15-man elimination match decided to basically eliminate each other with a raging fight all over the building before the match was over. And then they were all going to return in this Studcast main event. The same eight wrestlers were going to be facing each other in an eight-man tag, Texas Death Rules, and the winners get $5,000 prize money. That was supposed to go to the winner of the elimination match, but the elimination match didn't finish, and nobody won there. They had to stop the match because of what happened before it got that far.
Wow, so nobody wins the money. So when that happens, do you just take the money and go home?
Yeah, well, temporarily.
All right, so.
You know, but I had to, had to come back with it, you know. There. The guys like those little bonuses, man.
Yeah. Oh, I bet they do. And that's obviously why your company was so popular. Okay, so do you want to begin with the card for New Year's Night in 1981, Stud? A card that would be in all four major markets that week, and it was a big one.
Yeah, man, I think that's a great place to start, Dave. Great place to begin this ride, man, in the history. The opening match was a special challenge single match between two of the eight wrestlers that were going to be in the main event in the eight-man tag, which is coming later on in this card. So Dennis Condrey had developed a particular dislike for Bob Armstrong, I guess is a good way of putting it. And he had challenged him on the TV show that he was going to be writing about, talking about later. And that's the way this very unique night of wrestling was going to get kicked off, actually. So then another new wrestler was making his first ever appearance in the Gulf Coast of Southeastern. And he was a young brother of Ricky Gibson. Ricky had lost the Loser Leave Town match against Jerry Stubbs almost 2 months earlier. And now Robert Gibson was coming home, basically, to face his match was going to be against the Iron Mike Masters. Jimmy Golden was making his second appearance around the territory since his surprise return to the sport. And as I said last week, it seemed the fans had either forgiven or forgotten what a nasty wrestler Golden was 9 months earlier when he was badly injured. But either way, Jimmy was facing Oki Shekina in the third match. The fourth match was for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. Norvell Austin had not been able to beat the champion Jerry Stubbs in their last two matches after Stubbs had finally won the belt from Austin. And for those that may have missed the last Studcast, basically from a couple of weeks ago, it seems like now, a new mass wrestler called The Shadow made his first appearance in Southeastern, and he got himself a victory. And he also got a shot at Stubbs, the present United States Junior Heavyweight Champion. And Stubbs told Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher he refused to wrestle The Shadow because he said The Shadow was obviously, in his opinion, Norvell Austin, just wearing a white mask. So the match took place anyway, whether he liked it or not. He had to wrestle him for the title. And guess what? The Shadow won. And so this was going to be the return match for the belt. So this card had fewer matches because eight wrestlers were in one match. Consequently, there were two fewer matches on this card than the one the week before. But it certainly didn't mean that the building was not going to be close to full, that's for sure. The last match of the night was Bob and Brad Armstrong, Johnny Valiant, and the Tennessee Stud facing Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, Mr. Saito, and Ron Bass. The match had Texas death rules. That meant when a man lost a fall, he got a 30-second rest period. Then the bell rang to begin a 10 count for him to get to his feet. And if he did, the match continued until finally one of the contestants couldn't answer the bell. So basically, it was one of the most dangerous matches in wrestling, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. That night might not have been as many matches as the week before, but the Texas Death Match was always one of the fan favorites, and an eight-man Texas Death Match was probably going to last a long time. So that would certainly fill up an evening as opposed to more matches. That was certainly, I mean, there was a tremendous amount going on during this week. You had been changing the TV show's opening, so what happened on this week's TV show before those eight-man tags started the next week?
Well, after a one-of-a-kind regular TV opening that we had, with nobody else did it like we did it, and it went straight to the Christmas night in Mobile's main arena. First shot was with 9,000 screaming fans going crazy. It was on an extremely powerful video, basically from the first 15-man elimination match of that entire week. It started out in Mobile that week and went through the four major cities. And this was in no way an ordinary elimination match. And by the time the video picked up the action showing the last eight guys that were left in the match, there was no longer, you know, they were no longer focused on simply winning the $5,000 prize. But basically, it seemed like that all eight of us wanted to eliminate the other people, but we didn't want to do it in the ring. It just went from the ring somewhere else. It got really wild in the very first one of these elimination matches.
All right, I have to ask, were you ever in an elimination match that turned into a brawl before, and how exactly did this one do that?
Well, yeah, I had seen a few brawls in those matches, because anytime you get 15, 20 guys out there, you're likely to have one. But this was my first time, though, to ever be in one that had a father and son in it. So obviously, I'm referring to the Armstrongs, Bob and Brad, and they had just won the Southeastern belts from Dennis Condrey and Randy Rose one match before the elimination match started. And I guess Condrey and Rose's temperatures were still flaring a little bit from the loss of their belts. So seven wrestlers had already been eliminated, and this was a 15-man elimination match. We got down to the last eight. Seven were gone, and Brad was in the ring with Dennis Condrey. Saito was on the same side of the ring where Bob Armstrong was, you know, and you had eight people, so you had two guys basically on all four sides of the ring. They had to keep their hands on the rope to be able to be tagged, and so Saito was on the same side of the ring with Bob, and instead of staying away from Bob, mm-hmm. Saito made a move toward him, like he was going to jump him. So, and it was probably planned. When I thought about it later on, it was probably planned by Condrey and Rose and Saito in the dressing room before the match started. And I think they wanted to intentionally draw Bob and the referee's attention and give Condrey and Rose a chance to double-team Brad. So when Saito made his move, Condrey threw Brad out of the ring on the opposite side from where Bob and Saito were, and obviously right into the hands of Randy Rose. And so Rose started putting the boots to Brad, to Bob's boy. Let's call him, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Hell had no fury like Bob Armstrong when it came to his son.
Mm-hmm.
So Bob went flying around the ring like a man possessed, and literally at that point, that was it. All hell broke loose, and it was on, man. All against all, fight all over the building.
All right, since this was in Mobile, one of the most dangerous crowds in wrestling, according to you, you have painted the perfect picture of a soon-to-be near riot. So go ahead and continue with that.
Well, at this point, there were four separate fights going on in the building at the same time. And none of them were in the ring, though. And the policemen were trying to get control. Two guys were in the upper balcony, and the rest were all in the lower balcony, at least. But two of those were outside the building fighting. You know, so there was no way the referee was going to ever get control of it. Nobody was even in the ring, and he couldn't get them back to the ring. So he started having the announcer ring the bell. But, I guess he assumed that we might come back to the ring, but that was totally useless. It wasn't about to happen. So this fight went on for about another 10 minutes before the announcer and the referees called the match a no contest. And they took the $5,000 prize back to the dressing room, and that prize was not going to be handed to anybody at the end of that night.
Okay, so it was just held up. So, but I mean, to me, that's a great way to open a TV show, and I can only imagine what that looked like, and it being in Mobile, that no fans were involved.
Well, you know what happened, Dave, in this one is the fights were so wild that even the police couldn't get involved. They couldn't even stop it. And, you know, so the fans were running. They were going the opposite direction for a change.
Wow.
And I think that's why this fight lasted so long. It went about 10 minutes after it started.
All right. Are you going to have any videos from the Southeastern TV show of that week in 1981 on this studcast?
Yeah, I certainly am. I got three of them today, as a matter of fact.
Cool.
And the first one was of a Southeastern TV match, the first ever. That I said that Robert Gibson was just coming into the territory. And then I have a video of an arm wrestling contest from the Mid-South Wrestling Company, which was just, on the western side of our territory, owned by Bill Watts. And this was a piece of video he sent me of a arm wrestling contest between the new wrestler who was going to be arriving for us next week, mm-hmm. Paul Orndorff.
Wow.
Paul Orndorff was going to be arm wrestling. Wow, that brute of a son of a gun himself, Ox Baker, man. and then in the last video of the show, we're going to have an entire match with Bob and Brad Armstrong against Ron Bass and Oki Shekina. And that match is going to turn into another brawl, pretty similar to what happened in Mobile, with all eight wrestlers involved in that eight-man tag are going to be in the ring at the end of this, the last match in this show. So until the streaming channel is up and fans are not going to be able to see the action, but obviously they're going to be able to hear the commentary.
Okay, so until the streaming channel is up and running, all of our listeners who get the Studcast on audio-only platforms will hear the original description of these three events from Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, the beloved announcers.
That's correct.
All right.
But their commentary, man, is so good, man. It's like watching it live, you know. Charlie and Les work so well together. It sounds like they've been doing this for years together.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt about that. All right, so how about the first TV match of the day? Set it up for us.
Okay, it opened with Robert Gibson. He was making his Southeastern wrestling debut. Obviously, he's the younger brother of Ricky Gibson. Both of them were born in nearby Pensacola, Florida.
All right, I don't think you mentioned to me Robert Gibson was coming in to wrestle in 1981. He had to be very young, and what a crew of great young stars you were developing. Guys like him were one of the reasons Southeastern was considered the birthplace of so many superstars.
Yeah, this is going to be the first of three videos, like I said. And in this studcast, this particular show was recorded 44 years earlier, man. Almost exactly 44 years earlier, to be exact.
Okay, so our producer, Brian, is going to play for us the match from January 3rd, 1981, featuring Robert Gibson and Oki Shekina.
Ladies and gentlemen, this event, one fall with 15-minute time limit, introducing at 218 pounds from Pensacola, Florida, Robert Gibson. His opponent, 240 from Japan, the Japanese destroyer Oki Shekina.
Oki Shekina and Robert Gibson, referee Tommy Weathers. There's the bell. Gibson moves out. Shekina putting off his wooden shoes, headband. He's ready for action. And Charlie, you know, looking back at the first match on today's program, Stubbs and Armstrong, Jerry Stubbs again, now just kind of subsided, calmed down. I'd like to bring that point up again. Stubbs has handed the board to use on Brad Armstrong, and Stubbs was undecided, and finally gave that board back to Conrad Rose. And I'd say at this point, if I were Jerry Stubbs, I'd want more of Conrad Rose than I could ever want of Brad Armstrong.
Indeed. Rose and Condry are something to be dealt with here in the Southeastern wrestling area.
Obsessed with the Armstrong situation.
And I still don't understand why they would take this thing as far as they have with the Armstrong.
It certainly has gotten out of hand, Charlie, and something's going to have to be done about it. No doubt about that. They've cracked the ribs of Brad Armstrong. They broke the board over the head of Bob Armstrong last year in the program. Caused him a concussion. Right now, Robert Gibson moving on the Japanese destroyer, Oki Shekina. Gibson, long, lean young gentleman, has a lot of good moves. Shekina, the leg trip and the takedown. Chiquita, surely a tough seasoned veteran, Charlie, and he's a trial horse. He's a trial horse. If you can get by Chiquita, you're in the ballpark, you're good enough to play in the league, so to speak.
A lot of good credits in the on the side of Robert Gibson. I know
they're the wrestling family to get to.
Right. Of course, older brother Rick Gibson, now out of wrestling due to an injury.
Chop by Chiquita and another chop. Chiquita opening up now on Robert, front face block. Okie laying that weight in there. Good wide stance, takes his man through the canvas, applying that pressure. And I think, of course, here Robert Gibson has the good aerial moves, the drop kick, the flying head scissors. Nice reversal there. Comes up with the arm, traps that arm, goes high, drops the knee into the shoulder. Robert Gibson now on offense, and Chiquita in the position where he's going to have to go. Wrapping that arm, barring it now across the elbow. Chiquita with a handful of hair takes Gibson back into the rope.
Chops him while he's on those ropes, and again, Chiquita opening fire on Robert Gibson.
We're going to get a look at Illinois Chip Donovan against Paul Orndorff. It should be quite about a few well-conditioned athletes, Charlie.
Also, Ken Lucas will be in action later on today's edition of Southeastern Championship Wrestling. A lot of things happening in the Southeastern area and all over the country. We hope to bring you up to date on that.
Of course, coming up right after this match, Charlie will be Personality Profile. Chiquita moving in now, pressing with the advantage, goes to the trapezius area, one of his favorite maneuvers. Holds on the shoulder. Couple well-placed kicks, drops Gibson to one knee. Chiquita in. A handful of hair, but right where referee Tommy Weathers cannot see it, Charlie.
Chiquita taking Gibson into that turnbuckle. Continues to chop away.
And referee calling for the break starts his count. Chiquita now with the headlock to come out of the corner, using that thumb to jab into the neck, the windpipe of Robert Gibson. Okie moves in, goes back to that nerve center again, and there's Gibson with a nice retaliation, and again moves in now. Let's see where he's going with this one. Sends Chiquita cross ring. Opens up. Robert Gibson back in this one. An elbow staggers the Oriental gentleman. And Gibson moves right back in. That forearm. Headlock now. Chiquita shakes him free. Takes him high on the backdrop. And Gibson was stunned on that one.
Chiquita moving out again. Back into the ropes for Gibson. Beautiful move by Robert Gibson. Flying through the air. It's over.
Nice move. Trapped the legs well on that one. He had Chiquita tied up. He couldn't go anywhere.
I got to tell you what, Ron. That was a great match. I especially liked the finish. Robert Gibson was a great wrestler, like his brother. Maybe even better when you realize that he became part of one of the greatest tag teams in the history of wrestling, the Rock and Roll Express. All right, so who is next on the TV show?
Well, the new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, and he was basically a pretty instant star, man. The Shadow had become a real fan favorite, and he got a huge hand from the TV audience. He was being seen for the first time after winning the United States Junior Heavyweight belt the week before, and and he won it from Jerry Stubbs. And he had hardly gotten in the ring before Jerry Stubbs, former champion, came running to the set with Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, screaming that the wrestler in the ring wearing that mask and wearing that belt is nobody, none other than Norvell Austin, and everybody knows it. And he said, he just stolen my belt. And he says, I want it back. And I want it back right now. And he said he wasn't leaving the set until he got it. Then the studio crowd let him know how they felt about that. And the TV announcer then held the belt up during the match. So he basically kept the belt far away from Stubbs at this point. So Charlie and Les told him that that he could sit with them and he could watch the match, but when it was over, he had to leave the set. So Stubbs kept insisting he wasn't leaving the set until he got his belt back. So the Shadow wasn't paying him any attention, man. It didn't take long before he finished off another opponent, and he did it with a diving headbutt, which was really a great move. And as soon as his hand was raised, he grabbed his belt from the TV announcer. He jumped out of the ring, and instead of heading to the dressing room, he went straight to the set where Jerry Stubbs was. And Stubbs came bolting around the desk where he was sitting between Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher, and he got right in the Shadow's face. So Les saw it coming, man, and Les quickly jumped up, and he got between the two of them. And Stubbs was again demanding that Norvell Austin give him the belt, my belt, he called it. And the Shadow told Les to back off, and because he was going to give Jerry Stubbs his belt right now. So Stubbs pushed Les aside, and he said, you know, he says, it's about time, boy, you listen to me. So he says, now give me my belt. And so the Shadow held the belt up over his head, and he turned around to the studio crowd, and he got a big pop. And when he turned back around, Stubbs reached, grabbed for the belts, and saying, give it to me. And the Shadow did just that, man. He slammed that metal plates on the front of that belt into Stubbs' bald head. And Stubbs went flying backward. He landed on his back and near the set. And when he sat up, there was blood running down his face. And the Shadow left the set with his belt. And Les went to check on Stubbs. And Charlie asked the director, let's go to black. Let's get out of this.
All right, the first match was good, but that second one really got the show off to a wild start. Sounds like the Shadow gave Stubbs his belt back, but not exactly in the way Stubbs wanted it. All right, so how about the personality profile? Who was on that?
Well, all eight men in the upcoming eight-man tag match were in this profile, this had Texas death match rules, as I said earlier, and Charlie was in Studio B. With Bob and Brad Armstrong, Johnny Bagan and the Tennessee Stud. Les was in the main studio with Dennis Condrey, Randy Rose, Mr. Saito, and Ron Bass. So Les started things off, and he asked right off with Condrey and Rose how they felt since they were no longer the Southeastern Tag Team Champions. They had gotten beat in that match that turned into a brawl. They had lost their belts to a match right before the elimination match. So Dennis Condrey was just waiting, I guess, for an opportunity to say something about it. And he told Les that he was sick and tired of being pushed around by that over-the-hill old man, Bob Armstrong. And it was time to do something about it. And he challenged him right there. You know, I want you, old man, he called him. Hey, I want to have a single match against you, the first match on the card coming up this next week, before the eight-man tags ever even going to happen. It's going to be the last match. And so he said he wanted a one-on-one match, the first match of the night, with just him against the old man, he said. And it wasn't going to be an eight-man tag match after that, because he's going to hurt the old man, and it's going to be three against four. Because Armstrong Bob is not going to be able to make it to the big match, the eight-man tag. So his three partners, man, they gathered around him. They were patting him on the back and telling him what a great idea that was. And Les kind of rolled his eyes at the four of them, saying, that so-called old man is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And he says, Dennis, this might be that you might be the guy that don't make it to the eight-man tag. Well, geez, that they didn't want to hear that. They were celebrating Dennis's loud mouth, and so they kind of pounced on Les like cats on a mouse, man, and forced him basically to throw the profile to the other studio, to Charlie and the guys that were in the other studio. So they'd made a big mistake, too, because Bob let them know it as soon as Charlie accepted the toss from Les. You know, and he said, we were all pretty primed to win the $5,000 at stake. in these upcoming eight-man tag matches. And he said, now, Dennis Condrey, you know, you've been pretty foolish, man. I think it was Valiant that said, yeah, you, Condrey said, you slapped one of the baddest men in wrestling, you know. So Bob went off, man, you know, until we finally got him calmed down a little bit. And then it was obvious the very first match of the night was going to be something special instead of just an opening match. And it probably is going to put us, we felt like, on the road to victory. So this was, up to this point in Southeastern, the biggest eight-man tag match that had ever been, I think, in down there. Time for talking was done, and now with the question, the only question was now at this point was, who's going to survive this match?
I'll tell you what, you were absolutely right. Dennis Condrey just went too far. I would have hated to be in his shoes the next week. So what was following the personality profile?
Well, it was somebody I mentioned in the last studcast, a wrestler that had just returned after 9 months away from the sport. And I couldn't believe how fans had either forgotten or forgiven him for who he was and when he got hurt. And then I hadn't expected to see that from fans, but I was happy for him at the same time. And I'm talking about my cousin, Jimmy Golden. But before he came out of the dressing room to wrestle, Charlie and Les had a short video they wanted fans to see. And it had been sent to us from Bill Watts, the owner of the Mid-South Territory over there. Actually, it's out of Oklahoma, but they spent a lot of time in Louisiana and Mississippi. Basically, it was on the western border of our territory. And it was a video of one of the new stars in wrestling at that point, Paul Orndorff. And he had been challenged by Ox Baker to an arm wrestling match on TV in that territory. So Watts had the clip of it, and I asked him for it. I wanted to show people a new wrestler in a different light, and this is certainly a good way to do it. So this was a great piece of wrestling history, this arm wrestling contest here, and another example of what you miss when you can't see what is happening and can only get the description from the commentators. But wow, our commentators were so good. In fact, you could tell they were better than the ones that Mid-South had considerably.
Yeah, I can definitely vouch for that. All right, so Brian, our producer, again, we're going to ask him to please play for us the arm wrestling contest between Paul Orndorff and Ox Baker as we go back to the Mid-South territory back in 1980, and here it is.
Former North American heavyweight champion Paul Orndorff, a specimen of health.
Very complete athlete, Charlie. Physically well put together. The man's a fast wrestler, scientific. He can battle with you. And we're going to see him in a different light, not in the wrestling ring, but in an arm wrestling contest as we watch this tape with Ox Baker.
Here they come now. Both of these men have fantastic arms. You can just sense the power.
Come on, boy. I got you there, don't I, hey? You feel that power in that arm? Huh? Come on, you better. Wait, ho, ho. Everybody, watch this hand. Watch his hand, referee! Kirk! Now I got you, don't I, hey? Now I got you, boy! Come on, referee! Oh, ho, ho, ho! Come on, watch his hand, referee! Come on, it's... What? God! 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 I got it, referee, I got it!
it. Paul Orndorff does it again. Did you ever see such power in your life? Paul Orndorff, still the champion at arm wrestling.
Quite an athlete, Paul Orndorff.
Man, what a classic piece of history that was, Stud.
Well, someone was watching that arm wrestling contest that had a very personal relationship with Paul Orndorff. I didn't realize it until the end of the, we're all back in the dressing room watching this, as we always did on the monitor. And the shadow, who everyone knew was really Norvell Austin, had I had no idea that he had been tag partners with Paul Orndorff. Both of them young guys in their career, young in their career. And so the shadow came running out of the dressing room, grabbed his U.S. belt, and headed for the set. And, you know, he had just crowned Jerry Stubbs with that belt. But he wanted to go in, and he wanted to know when he got there why no one had told him that his old wrestling partner was coming to Southeastern. And he began to tell his story to Charlie and Les about his and Paul Orndorff's close relationship. And he had barely began to paint the picture of their close friendship before here comes Jerry Stubbs. Jerry showed up at the set. He had a towel with blood on it wrapped around his hand because he had been busted open earlier. And when the shadow saw him, it was just a little bit too late. He didn't see him in time to avoid a problem. So Stubb pulled the towel off his hand, and he had what appeared to be, to the guys and me and the guys in the dressing room, a pair of brass knucks on his hand, man. And he hit the shadow with it. And so Austin went face first in the floor, man, behind the set. Then Stubbs grabbed the USA belt and that fell on the table. And he grabbed it from out in front of Charlie Platt and Les. And that's when Jimmy Golden came out of the dressing room. He's going to be in the next match. And he started to the ring, but he saw Stubbs grab the belt. And Stubbs was just a little bit in front of him. And he just kind of detoured instead of going into the ring. He just kind of went behind Stubbs. And Stubbs is kind of making his way to the dressing room, and the ring sat right there by the dressing room door. So Jimmy just grabbed him by the back of the neck and ran him face first into the steel ring post. And Stubbs went down again, busted again, and right by the dressing room door. Studio crowd exploded, man. You would have thought that Golden was the biggest babyface wrestler in the territory. And he'd only been back in action for 1 week. This is only his second time on TV. So then Jimmy picked up the USA belt, and he took it back to the set. By that time, Charlie and Les were trying to help a bloody shadow up to his feet, and Bob and Brad Armstrong came out. They grabbed the shadow, and they took him back to the dressing room with his belt, and Jimmy went on to the ring. So when they did something like that before getting into the ring, when any wrestler did, it just got your adrenaline up big time. You know, you normally go in there and you have to get the match started slowly and it builds. But, you know, he grabbed him, he ran him into the steel post, and then he got right in the ring. And it took, you know, and when he did, Jimmy was ready to go. I mean, he was on fire at this point. And so they rang the bell. They introduced him. They introduced his opponent. And they rang the bell. And Jimmy just bumped this guy all over the ring. I mean, he did everything you could do to a guy, just about. And he had him, I thought he gave him a neck breaker, which is he had won the week before. I think we showed that as one of our in the last studcast, we showed that as one of our matches from the past.
Yep.
And he gave this guy a neck breaker too. And I thought, well, surely God, he's going to pin him and that's going to be the end of it. But he made no attempt to pin him. He just left him laying there on his back. And then he went over to the to the ropes and he climbed up on the top rope and he just stood there waiting. The guy was laying there, and he turned over on his face first, and then when he slowly got himself up on his feet, he started to turn around slowly, like, where did Golden go?
Right.
And and when he did, he finally found him.
Yeah.
With both of his feet in his face.
Yeah.
And he turned that guy a backflip. He landed on his face, man, with a, what a tremendous pop from the studio crowd on that one. Then Jimmy covered him, man, got the three count, and another thundering ovation, man. And at that point, Jimmy returned to wrestling. I felt like, I thought, you know, I was really concerned his first 2 weeks now,
mm-hmm.
getting back in and getting started and not getting hurt, not getting injured. And wow, I got a real feeling at that point, standing there watching that he's going to be good. He's going to be good in the business again. He's going to make it the rest of his life, man.
Wow, it's awesome that you kind of gave us an update. That's exactly what I was thinking about, was, okay, wait a minute now. Jimmy was out for a real good reason for a pretty good while, too. So it's good that you kind of give us that little bit of an update, and it'll be interesting to follow what happens with Jimmy from here on after he's back from that. I think it was a back injury, wasn't it?
Yeah. It just tore his back out, man. Wow, yeah. Horrible.
All right, what a great TV show it's been so far. All right, so take us to the last TV match, Stud.
Well, there had been some wild things happening in this show so far, and but really the best was yet to come. I mean, this last match in this TV show was spectacular, and this is going to be the last piece of video in this TV show, and it's the entire TV match, the tag match. Between Ron Bass, Oki Shekina, and Bob and Brad Armstrong. And man, this match literally ends with a bang.
All right, so we're going to get Brian to play the TV tag match that ended by creating more fuel for the eight-man tag fire in the first week of January 1981. All right, so let's roll it, Brian.
Please, our next match, one fall tag team match, time limit remaining. Introducing in the corner to my right, at a combined weight of 520 pounds, Ron Bass and the Japanese destroyer Oki Shekina. Their opponents, at a combined weight of 433 pounds, from Marietta, Georgia, the current Southeastern Tag Team Champions, Bob and Brad Armstrong.
Japanese destroyer Oki Shekina, big Ron Bass from Texas, taking on the Southeastern Tag Champions, the Armstrongs, Bob and Brad. What a television main event.
Brad and Brad against Oki Shekina and outlaw Ron Bass. And you're right, Charlie, the Southeastern Tag Team Champions. Bradley certainly proud of those belts, and doubly proud of the fact that he won his first title along with his dad, who has held many championships down that professional wrestling trail of his. Shekina driving Brad into that corner. The tag goes. Bob, with that old-fashioned American right hand, does his thing, and we've got action.
Twist by Bob, tag is made with Brad, and from the other side, the count begins by Tommy Weathers, double thrust into the chest, and a pinning position on Shekina. There you see Bass going over on the side, pull Brad off.
Talk about teamwork, we saw it there with the Armstrongs, we were discussing teamwork as we watched Tommy and Rose, and it's the type of competition that you're going to see when the Armstrongs, Connor and Rose meet in that squared circle. Shekina makes the tag, and the Outlaw from Texas moves in to do battle with Brad Armstrong.
And the capacity crowd in our television sports arena picks up the chant, go Brad, go.
They got to get behind a winner, and they're certainly behind Brad Armstrong. The comments are made about the youth of this gentleman, about his size, about his lack of experience. But the main comment is, along with his father, he shares the Southeastern Tag Team Championship, and that speaks for itself, Charlie.
Bass using that thumb to the throat. That's Brad Armstrong. Connection in the midsection. Tag is made with Shekina. From behind, Shekina.
Brad hanging tough as Shekina, and Bass switching on him. pounding away at him, trying to soften him up. And that clothesline shot by Shakina has Brad skidding across that canvas and hitting the deck. Again, a nice tag, and Bass Shakina working well as a combination. Bass blocking with that front chancery now as Bradley trying to drive him into that corner and make it to his partner.
Use of the tights there by Bass to bring Brad over into that corner. And again, Shakina's in. Picks up that front chancery. And again, Brad Armstrong tries to make the tag with his father. He does.
But referee Tommy Weathers did not see the tag, Charlie. He cannot allow it. When he turned around, Brad was more than an arm's distance from his father. And because of that, the tag will not be allowed. Shakina does make the tag with Ron Bass. And the Big Outlaw moves in to pound away at Brad Armstrong. Working on the abdominal muscles now. Going to that stomach claw. And this may be something he's helped perfect with his friend, Mr. Saito.
Take down by the hair.
Give credit to Brad Armstrong. He hangs up. He's spotting the man's size. He's spotting him experienced, but in no way, shape, or form is he spotting him any intestinal fortitude or just pure, plain old American guts.
Bass continues to apply that pressure. Brad Armstrong trying to make his way to his feet.
Brad is up, and let's see where he's going from here. Shot to the midsection, loosens him up a bit, but Shakina catches a tag. And Oki moves in to stop Brad Armstrong. If Brad could have gotten away there, he would have made that tag. Shakina now right back to where Parker Bass left off. And we've got a heck of a tag match on our hands, Charlie.
Indeed we do, Les. Shakina picking up where Bass left off. Applying that pressure, coming down again. Brad needing to make the tag with his father.
The abdominal muscles need a rest now. Bass and Shakina have been working alternately on Brad's midsection. And Bob, as you can see at the top of your screen, center, yelling encouragement to his son and partner. Brad gets a good right in, but from that distance, it's hard to stop a man.
Brad still goes under Shakina. He makes the tag. Bob Armstrong in. Then comes Bass.
And when Pimp opens up, Pimp knows how to go. Bob Armstrong takes care of both. Backs up on Shakina. And Ron Bass catching in now outside the ring. He goes. Let's see what Bob's got in mind here. He goes after Bass. Brad moves in on Shakina. And Bob Armstrong driving Ron Bass across the floor outside the ring here in our studio.
Bass going into that ring post in the ring. Brad continues.
Shakina choking Brad Armstrong over in that corner. Bob and Ron Bass back at it again. Referee Tommy Weathers can't get it stopped. Bass moves away again. Shakina trapped in the corner by Brad Armstrong. Now this seesawed back and forth, but as the action slows down, it's Brad Armstrong having his way with Oki Shakina.
And what a tag main event we have here. Brad takes his man high on the Japanese destroyer for the pin. And there you see Ron Bass pulling Brad off by the hair.
Brad up waiting center ring now. Bass caught the tag but couldn't slide in on the blind side. So Bradley is waiting on him, and let's see what's going to happen here. Never ceases to amaze me. The type of stick-to-itiveness, the go-get-em attitude that Brad Armstrong has, Charlie. He's got the arm bar right now on Ron Bass, and the Outlaw in trouble as Brad windmills it a couple times and tags Dad.
By Bob Armstrong, Bass goes down the canvas. Shakina trying to make his way in the ring, and that's blocked by Bob.
Again, we've got all four wrestlers in that square circle. Bass with a little advantage over Bob Armstrong is being put out now by the referee. Let's see what happens here. And over the top. Bob has got his man as he gets it out. He's got him. Good win.
And a great win for the team of Bob and Brad Armstrong. Texas. Dennis Condren, Randy Rose, Mr. Saito hit the ring. The victory belongs to the Armstrongs. But right now, Condren and Rose go to work on Bob. Saito putting his padded sleeper on Brad Armstrong as Shekinah and Bass help out. Bob Armstrong has been lacerated, Charlie, as Condren and Rose pound away. And here comes the Tennessee Stud. Blocking Bass. Here comes John Valiant. The ring is filling up. Valiant, the Stud, the Armstrong, Shekinah, Rose, Condry, Bass, Saito, they're all in that ring, and who's got who is anybody's guess. But we've got mass confusion, we've got action. And your winners of the match were the Armstrongs, Bob and Brad, and we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Okay, so now I see why you said the last TV match was going to be the best of the entire show. It was absolutely crazy and definitely added fuel to the fire that was to come in those eight-man tag matches. All right, I tell you, this has been a great TV show. So what happened the next week in Southeastern?
Well, in the four major markets, Bob Armstrong and Dennis Condry, they wrestled to a 15-minute time limit draw. And I watched all four of those matches. Dennis Condry really really impressed me. He was better than I ever thought he was. To wrestle Bob Armstrong to a 15-minute time limit draw, especially after what he had said about him, you know, I really expected that Bob was going to go out there and kick Dennis Condry's rear end. And he did in a couple of spots, but you know, Dennis Condry was right there for Bob too. So you know, and the funny thing about it is the match ended up with most of them madder at the end of it than they were when they started. So Robert Gibson won his first matches all around the territory. He was wrestling Iron Mike Masters, and wow. Robert was an impressive young wrestler, really, really impressive. Jimmy Golden finished his second undefeated week against Hoki Shekinah. You know, Jimmy had gone through 2 weeks, and as I mentioned a minute ago, I was concerned that he might not even make 2 weeks. And instead of that, Jimmy was looking maybe as good or better than he ever was. And then in the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship match, between the champion, the Shadow, and Jerry Stubbs, former champion Stubbs regained his belt. He got his belt back, and he didn't get it face first this time either. So, then the eight-man tag match were all stopped by both teams being disqualified. No winner. I mean, it kind of ended the way the first one did in Mobile that first week. You know, this it was crazy. Everybody fighting out everywhere, and so the money was supposed to be $5,000 given away for the winning team, and no money was given away at all. So it was held up by the Southeastern Commissioner Don Curtis. So, but the eight-man tags were all going to be coming back again in this next studcast. We're going to be talking about them again. They're still going to have the Texas death rules. The time there was going to be this time. They were going to have two referees. A second referee figured that might keep the match in a little better control. One of them may be on the floor to try to keep guys from starting to fight each other. And there had to be a winning team every night in these eight-man tags. So, you know, that meant basically either team could do whatever the heck they wanted to. It was only important that you didn't get counted out and wasn't able to answer that 10 count and win. Mm-hmm. And, the Texas death rules was a big the big part of this whole thing. So and then the team that won most of the majority of the four matches, mm-hmm, was going to receive. This is pretty crazy. Now, Don Curtis had already thrown around a whole lot of money. But at this point, he said he was going to, and because he hadn't given away, didn't give away the money in four of those matches from the week before, he said he was going to give the team that won these four matches, the most of the four matches, was going to receive a $30,000 bonus.
Whoa.
Above what the payoffs were.
Wow.
And that's $7,500 bonus per man.
All right, how much stud would that be? How much would that be in today's money?
I kind of knew that you were going to ask that, Dave.
Mm-hmm.
So the $30,000 bonus money, the $30,000 alone in today's money would be $120,000.
Wow. Wow.
So that meant that the $7,500 that each man was going to get individually, that figure would have been $30,000 each man.
Wow, in today's money. Okay. So, but even back then, $7,500 per man still buys a new car in 1980, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
A Cadillac.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you take that money home to mama's going to be happy. That's one heck of a lot of money, and that didn't include what the regular payoffs were. All right, speaking of the payoffs, what about the attendances? Take us back on that and update us on what happened in the four major markets.
Well, Montgomery had 3,600 in their civic center, and it was back to its regular night on a Wednesday. Dothan had 4,900 in the farm center. Birmingham had 5,600 in Boutwell Auditorium. Building only held about 6,000. So it had 5,600. It looked full. It was basically full. And the main arena in Mobile, which had that 10,000 seats, they had 8,300. They had 9,000 the week before. They came back with 8,300 more. So basically, those four nights, we drew 22,400 fans in just four nights in the first week of 1981. Southeastern had again become basically the best small territory in the world.
All right, I tell you what, this has been a really good one today, Stud. I'm sorry, but we're not going to have enough time in this edition for a learning tree question today. So where are we going to be riding next week, Ron? Fill us in on that.
Well, Paul Orndorff, man, another young star, basically a future Hall of Famer, was making his debut on the next week in the next Studcast, basically. Jerry Stubbs, he had his belt back, and he was going to give the Shadow one last chance ever. The deal was ever. You never, ever, you don't win and beat me, you'll never, ever get another chance to wrestle me for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. And then there was all this big money, man, on the horizon at this point. The eight-man tag matches had turned into basically eight-man wars, especially when Don Curtis added that $30,000 bonus money to the winners of the predominantly, whoever won the most of those four matches.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully I'm going to get some good news, man, from the streaming people here. I'm really looking forward to hearing any time now. And I'm going to keep fans posted about what's going on here. And I hope to have, before the end of this week, some good news for fans. And this is one of the greatest places, man, for wrestling at this point on the planet, man. It was really, really, territory was really on fire. We had some of the greatest young wrestlers coming in, and really looking forward to coming back here and tearing things up with another one of these Studcasts, Dave.
Hey, no doubt about it. You've certainly worked really hard on this streaming channel, and so you deserve to get this thing underway. And I know you've really been working big time for that. All right, any closing comments today, Stud?
Well, I always, I sure want to thank those that have been so patient with us, man, on this TennesseeStudStreaming.com channel. And I'm about to start, I'm feeling like, Dave, I'm about to start suplexing some of these internet hot shots.
I'm going to stand clear of that.
Can't get things done, man.
I know what you mean.
Somebody may have to bail me out, man, if I can't find the right people here. So please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
I got your back, Stud. Don't you worry. All right. For Ron Fuller in the great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening to this Studcast. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955 and on Twitter, now known as X, Dave_Doin. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC. Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So fool Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
One, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the great Smoky Mountains.